Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Good evening. Thanks for joining us for the Technology Management Program Winter Lecture Series. We're delighted to have you with us. We'll have Ian Kilpatrick presenting. Just wanted to remind you, if possible, for the Q&A at the end, if you could wait for the microphone so we can capture your comments for the television production. Thanks very much, and I'll have Brittany Howard do the introduction.
Hello, welcome to the Winter Lecture Series of Technology Management Program. I'm delighted to introduce Ian Kilpatrick. This is somebody who is not only a gifted designer, but has kind of dappled in everything. So you'll hear the many phases of his life, from working at a record studio to starting a Web 2.0 business, and everything in between. So please join me in welcoming Ian Kilpatrick.
Hello, and thanks for having me, Bill. Thank you. I've been on Bill's radio show a couple times and talked and had a great time about my Web 2.0 startup. And he asked me to be here, so I've been looking forward to it for a while. I'm probably going to be a little bit different than most presenters here because I'm more of a visual guy. I'm not so much into statistics and a lot of the business side. I mean, I am business side, but I'm much more a visual person. And this is probably going to be a little bit more of a philosophical presentation, ideas from an entrepreneur's life rather than apply this to your business and you'll succeed kind of a thing. So this is the things I've gone through in the 11 years I've been an entrepreneur. So let me get started. My name is Ian Kilpatrick. That's me. I am an entrepreneur. I am a startup junkie. Love them. A musician as well. And I am a graphic designer. That's my background. And I've been in the web world for about 11 years, so that makes me pretty old in web years, kind of like dog years. I've had about 5 startups that I've been a part of since starting my web life. And none of them have been sold for millions of dollars. Couple of them have met my expectations. Most of them have not, partly because I set my expectations pretty high. But I used to think of each one as kind of a wasted time of mine, each failure. And I now know, after years of doing it, that each one was a learning process, and I'm getting closer and closer to the big bang succeeding one. And I've got a couple that I'm working on now that I hope are the ones that take me to the millions. But anyways, I'm going to kind of explain to you what I'm involved in now, the 2 projects I'm working on, my business and then the startup. And then I'm going to kind of take you through the steps that got me there, and hopefully you'll take some lessons away from what I learned and not have to make the same mistakes I did. So my current business is Killmill. It's my interactive agency. It's not, I get that a lot, not Kill Bill, it's with an M. It's a boutique agency. We work with companies building their complete sites, flash interactive stuff, web apps, even iPhone apps if need be, print design, branding, you name it, visual, we handle it. And we moved here, started about 9 years ago. We moved from Sacramento to LA about 5 years ago to chase down more interesting projects, basically. And, in Sacramento, where we started it, is pretty much construction and government, and that got boring real quick. So we moved here and actually succeeded in finding some good projects. One was, I'm going to show you a few of them now. I wish they were flash, because this one's fully flash, and it's really interactive. It's for the egg board. They gave us these 2 commercials that they're running nationwide, and so we need a cool place for people to come to when they go to the website after the commercial. So we did this full thing, and it won awards, and they were real happy with it, and we were too. Web example of what we do is Technicolor. We redesigned their site, did a little bit of web branding. It was a lot of fun because it was a brand I knew from childhood watching these colorized black and white movies. They do a lot more than that now. So we kind of had to take that and explain it, just giving you a cross-section of Killmill. You can see more at our site. But print ad campaign for, a base manufacturer, Warwick. They wanted it to look like art pieces and illustrations. So I do most of the creative and the design work at the agency. And so I got to do hands-on these, and it was a lot of fun. did like a series of six of these, and they loved it. And the first project we got when we moved down here was with the American Music Awards. They needed some posters, pieces printed up for these artists that they would sign and auction off for Make-A-Wish, and they would give the donations back to them. So great project, great. It was exactly what we came down here for. And here's a couple other companies we've done work for. Not saying it to like boast or show off, but just to say we set a goal moving down here and learned things on the way and succeeded. So Kill Mill is my bread and butter. It's where I make my living, and it allows me to venture out into other business ideas, startups, ideas that I get. Been reading a lot of, well, years ago I was reading a lot of Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm sure you guys are familiar with that. And just getting passive income. So I've been always looking for that idea. And I've started a few. And my latest one is beenup2.com. We started about 2 years ago in April of 2007. And it was a friend of mine from Sacramento came to me with the technology, said, I have this great technology. Let's apply your design mojo to it, and let's make a business, you know, make a little site, social network site. We were trying to take on Facebook and all those guys. And that's a tough challenge. But Beenup2 is, let's see, I'll try to explain it. It's like Twitter plus Flickr plus Facebook minus MySpace plus 43 things all divided by Blogger. Make sense? You guys get the idea? I think I just described about 200 other startups that are out there right now. That was our problem, too. But it's not really that. It sort of is, but it's a photocentric site. You take a picture with your camera phone, send it into the site to an email that we provide when you sign up. And it posts to your live feed as well as a public feed, and you get friends on there, and they comment. And it seems pretty simple, but it was innovative 2 years ago and still kind of is. What made this one different and where we innovated? Well, here's an example of a page. You send it in. Well, this is my barbecue. I made it into a clever little diagram there. We put the comments and made it more conversation-driven next to the photos rather than below. Most photo sites have comments below. This is really the biggest part that separates us from the rest. And it made it conversation-driven. Instead of the photos being the center of the focus of the site, it actually became a conversation starter. And people just want to get on there and talk. So most of the comments are 10 long, 20 long. Some of them are over 1,000, which is kind of ridiculous. Some have none because they have no friends, but, you know, boo-hoo. So I brought a few of my favorite posts just to give you an example of how people use it and a few of my favorite photos. This was a bird that hit a window, left a little dust behind. Beautiful and sad. I actually didn't know that happened. It was kind of interesting. A mail truck on fire. They don't see that every day. Somebody sees it every day, and hopefully they've been up to it. This was a tree that fell through in the middle of a house, and happened. They took this picture hours after it happened. CNN, I think, picked it up a few days later, so we were kind of, ha-ha, you know, we got the news before you did. Sarah Palin rally, getting a little political. Somebody went there and took a picture. Pretty close shot, too. This was my wife. Her sister actually was driving. They were caught speeding 93 miles an hour in a minivan. I was so proud of my wife, though. She got this shot. I mean, nerves were... And the policeman didn't catch her, so... we call that a ninja when you catch somebody and they don't know you're taking a picture. And if she ninja'd the policeman, so... Dog on a counter. Struck me. BFFs, lizards. I don't know how that happened, but... Hi, Mom, I'm okay. Now, this was Bruce Lyon 1 year ago. I'm not sure if it was this room. Must not have been. But somebody posted it when he did his presentation. There's a spy among you, or a couple. One odd happening on the site. This guy took a picture of this guy because he had just taken a picture of carrots in Jamba Juice. And he says, I swear this guy's been up doing a picture of carrots. And you explained it on the comments and stuff like that. And sure enough, he was right. And there's the other guys. And they didn't meet each other. They saw it on the site later on. You know, kind of a strange little Beenup2 occurrence. But the final interesting use I saw on the site was this guy in Chicago who noticed a lot of people wearing camouflage as a fashion statement rather than what it's used for, which is hiding yourself. So he went with it, and people kept sitting on this man's lap thinking it was an empty seat. Kind of funny. Hiding on the red line. Takes a very brave man or a crazy one to cross the street intersection while fully disguised. After a while, I just got fed up with these guys. Pants jacket, oh, come on. And pre-camos, this has gone too far. He had a lot of pictures. These were only five. So Binuptu has been, we've achieved some minor success. We have about 11,000 users over the past 2 years, 2.5 million page views a month. I think we just reached or about to reach 500,000 pictures, photos on there, 1.5 million comments. So it's not like Facebook. We're not blowing everybody out of the water, but it's not bad for a startup. We're meeting some relatively small goals, kind of mid-stride here. And as a free gift to everyone, I'm going to give you a free account. You just go there and sign up. We'll recognize. No? Okay, well, tried. So that's my startup. That's what I'm involved in now. I've been for about 2 years. I don't have any other startups that I'm working on at the moment. This is taking my time in that realm. So I'd like to start now, kind of work from where I began and go through steps, little peaks in my life as an entrepreneur that led to, gave me basically lessons and wisdom for these two companies. When I was a kid, I was 11 years old, and I got my first computer. This was a Texas Instrument TI-99-4A, and it was actually beige. It wasn't this cool, but it was still cool. And it came with a book called TI Extended Basic that basically just showed you how to program and create graphics online. Or not online. Web was not around. It was on the TV because we plugged it straight into the TV. It was that old. So I soaked it up. I grabbed this book, and I just started going to town on it and took one whole Saturday, and I read one of the scripts you could write would make Mr. Bojangles dance across your screen. All right, I'm going to do this, So I started going. I took one whole Saturday and hours of programming and finally got down to the last line of code, and I was, reading the book basically and typing it in hunt and peck. And I called my whole family around and said, I'm about to do it. Let's see Mr. Bojangles. And this is what I got. Yeah. It was really disappointing. It actually made noise, like, it was like taunting, I was devastated. 11-year-old, I was thinking this guy's going to go dancing across my stage, but he didn't. But it taught me a lesson. Not my very first hard-learned lesson in computer world, which was set reasonable expectations. I've actually had to learn this lesson over and over, pretty much with every startup I've had, which was understand that I set goals up here, but I'm probably gonna reach right here, first step, and then next step, and then next step. And if I, like in this case, I thought I was gonna reach up here, I didn't even get close, and I gave up. I didn't touch programming for years after that. Didn't even like the computer. So anyways, that was my first hard-learned lesson as a kid. 11 years later, I graduated from CSU Monterey Bay. It was a startup university. I was their second graduating class. And it was a lot of fun because I got to develop the majors with the teachers along with all these other people. I was there the first year and the second year. And it was a real startup environment. It was, chaotic, a lot of money, no focus, your standard startup. And I also studied jazz there, and I got my next big lesson from my jazz teacher, John Purcell, who was a trainer for Dave Sanborn and Leroy Moore, late Leroy Moore, Dave Matthews Band, and he had his own jazz quartet. It was awesome. And he took me and threw me into the deep end in jazz. I didn't know what I was doing. I played bass, but I didn't play jazz bass yet. And he said, you're going to open the music department with me and this other guy, Dan Nielsen, excellent pianist, and we're going to play in a trio, and you're gonna start open this whole thing, grand opening. We're gonna play a trio. Half the time, my bass amp wasn't even on. It was horrible. But that whole year or two, he just kept doing that. I was the only bassist around, so he kept throwing me into these trios, and I had to learn. I had to learn the things that I wanted to learn them, but it was just really, really difficult. Made my brain basically grow probably twice, like an infant, And it taught me that if I aim to be great, I got to get in over my head. And partly because when you get in over your head, you don't have a ceiling. There's nothing to say, here's where you're supposed to be, so you stop. And now whenever I come across a situation like this, I know that I have no clue what it looks like when I'm going to do that. Those American Music Award posters, I had no idea what to do. They commissioned an artist, and I was an artist, but I hadn't done art. And so I didn't know when to say I was done, when to quit. And consequently, you just shoot past it. You don't stop when you don't know that there's an end goal. So I always recommend everybody to say yes to everything, unless it's like open heart surgery or something. You don't want to do that. But if it's roughly in your field, do it, and you'll probably grow more there. In fact, I'd say this is the number one way to grow, is get into something that you've never done before and you don't have any idea how to do. So after college, after jazz, after all that, I moved back to Sacramento and became an art director for a startup record label. First startup, whatever. Everything is a startup, basically. I haven't really worked for non-startups. But I did all their CD covers, their websites, branding, and all that stuff. And I cut my teeth in the design world there. I made a lot of mistakes. Got boxes of thousands of CDs with just a black face on the CD, no text, and had to sell them that way just because I didn't know what I was doing. But I learned pretty much everything, every skill I have in the design world there, and used to think, what a waste of time. I messed up so many things, but I learned everything there. 2 years later, it ran out of money. It lost its funding, and I had to move on to a web firm down in Sacramento, downtown. One of the top ones in the area, working on a lot of great projects, great brands, and it was about a year before the dot-com bubble burst. I was there. We were just going gangbusters, hiring everybody, and then it burst, and then we all got laid off. We all just, like, rock bottom was right there. We just kind of hopped off, and there we were. And consequently, pretty much everybody in the web world at that time, were you any of you guys in the working field at that time? Do you remember? I see that hand. That's great. So you know what it was like. There was just no work for web people at all. And we were close to the Bay Area, thousands of people out of work like me. So I haven't had a job since. I couldn't find work. I put resumes out everywhere and decided I got to go find work myself. And as a designer, there were two ways to get work. You go directly to a company, a client, which is great money but not consistent, or you go to an agency that has the work and they just outsource it, less pay but more consistent. Well, everybody was doing that, so I had to find even more innovative ways to find business, and I had to kind of tweak how I thought about all of it. So I would actually look up conventions coming through town, boat shows and RVs and all that, and find out where they're going to be, gun and doll shows, you know, and then find out who's going to be there, and then find the local ones, call them up and say, okay, 2 months from now you're going to have this thing, you need takeaways, I'll do it for you. And I'd get business that way, you know, I innovated. And I'd say that's a good rule anywhere in business, is you guys probably know this, you find the end goal, find out where the people are actually going to be and where they'll spend money and pay you money, then you work backwards from there. It's also a great way to get clients before you have a software or whatever it is, a business model, which is always a good idea. Don't go out there blindly, build something, and expect everybody's going to need it. You find the need, you get the people interested, and then you build it accordingly. So that was one thing I learned at the beginning of my search for work. And the other was to be as niche as possible. Don't do everything. When you're looking to open a bottle of wine, you probably reach for that and not that. You know, it has a corkscrew on it, but most likely you're going to choose this one. And I found that same was true with my business. When I offered everything, I'll do print, I'll do web, I'll do everything, they would say, oh, we'll pass. We're going to find a guy who does flash. And so I learned, oh, I got to do flash. So I did. I started doing flash and high-end design. And once I got into companies and built their trust and actually got in the door, then I was able to expand. And then they would say, oh, well, you do this too? Well, we'll give that to you as well, you know. So for those solopreneurs, entrepreneurs out there, Killmill is a two-man shop. So I'm talking a lot from experience of a small group that is very personal with people. So, you know, anyways, that's the lesson I learned there. So once I established myself as that niche thing, I was able to get in and expand my offerings to these people. And that kind of launched Killmill to what it is today. It wasn't really fully, it didn't pay all the bills immediately. at all. There's feast or famine. I don't know if any of you have ever worked for yourself or just been self-employed, solopreneur, or whatever. It's up and down. You got to kind of save for the lean times, but so it's not easy. But it's definitely fun and free, freeing. But it also freed me up to kind of approach other or venture out into other business opportunities and get things on the side going and things I was interested in or that I'd come across. And we came across one. It was a cell phone signal amplifier. It was a product that a manufacturer was making, and we said, hey, we can brand this thing. Let us take this thing and rework it, make it for a consumer product, because it was pretty tech. You know, it's for like the people who run all the wires and have everything coming out everywhere in their home, and that's just not consumer friendly. So we were thinking iPod. Let's go iPod with this thing, you know. And we did. We were able to rework it, do all the stuff, all the marketing stuff. We really had a good strategy with it, and they let us in on all the manufacturing talks and everything. So it was a great lesson. And it was my partner Baron and I were kind of in over our heads there. So we got another guy who had actually been a successful businessman, older English fellow, older than us. He's not old, but he'd had a bunch of successful ventures. He had brought salons to South Africa. He brought childcare day schools to British Airways when they noticed that in the summertime when the kids are out of school, all their sick days went like skyrocketing. And they're like, wonder why that's happening. He came in and said, oh, it's because the kids are out of school. You need them taken care of at British Airways. As soon as they did, they leveled the playing field. The sick days went back down to normal amount. So anyways, bright guy. He now has an England island in England that he rents out for weddings. So great guy to have on my team. So he sat us down before. You know, actually, that's another good thing when you're looking for people to come aboard with your company, especially for investors. Find people who've already succeeded and know what they're doing. Anyways, he sat us down and he said, you know, before we start this thing, I'm going to tell you that's going to be a roller coaster. And it really was. This was like the ride of our lives, this manufacturing thing, because nothing ever works with when you're manufacturing a product. It doesn't work the same the way you think it's going to work. It's just going to, you're going to hit problems. You're going to have things put on backwards, which we did, and you're going to have things delayed. And so it was really a frustrating time. And I was really glad that he said that because I learned through that process, first off, to stick with it. And also I learned that you shouldn't make decisions at the high point or the low point of the thing. Know that you're going to have emotional highs and lows. You're going to have financial highs and lows. You're going to have everything, you know, physical. You're going to stay up late. When you're down low, the company's not worth anything, and you're willing to give a lot away, and people take advantage of it. You know, so like, basically, just don't hold off on doing anything. Basically, don't make decisions. Don't do anything you can until you're kind of more level-headed. And when you're at the high point, you think your business is worth a ton, and you'd be a lot more liberal. You start committing to things you couldn't deliver for, and you overcommit. So I actually found that the best decision you make time is smack in the middle, of course. I mean, that's obvious. But a couple hours after you drink a cup of coffee or 2 days of good sleep, you know. And I still, to this day, it's still hard for me to put off making a decision when I'm really emotionally ramped up or got some good news or some bad news. I think, no, I'm sure it's this way, and I still have to force myself to wait a day or two and let my head just kind of get back to square one. So I kind of brings us back to current era. I've had a couple of the startups, did a cosmetic line, sold online, chocolate cosmetics and these kinds of things. And we're still trying to find a niche for that. But it's, you know, we've had a few other things that I've applied a lot of these to. But this brings us pretty much back to Binuptu and Kilmel. And I'd like to share a couple other things that don't really have examples, life examples that I've had with me, but are still good bits of wisdom just that I've learned over the years. One is learn to love change. The web changes, as you guys know, very, very quickly. Technology changes, everything changes. And the more you can accept that, the further ahead you're going to be of your opponent, your competitor. And the more even eager to change and see where things are going, trends, staying on the bleeding edge, is really important. It takes knowing that you don't know everything, which is hard to do, you know, because as soon as you start thinking, oh, I know it all, you're going to become stagnant. You're not going to grow because you're not going to think you have to learn. My parents always said, think water, not rock. And that's kind of the theme for that. You flow with things. You don't stand still. As soon as you stand still, you become passe. That's why you see 80s rockers walking around, you know, thinking they're cool. And it's not neo-cool. It's just old, you know. You don't want to become outdated. I embrace change. Whenever I have a big life change come in, it's just the bigger the better. You know, bring it on. Let's do this thing. Because it means something's happening. You can't move when you're standing still. In this life, you're going to have trouble. You're going to run into problems. Things aren't going to work how you had had hoped or expected. And dealing with disappointment is a really big, like not letting resentment, people doing you wrong, don't hold on to that stuff. So I told you it's philosophical. It's not so, apply this to your business, but just to help you as entrepreneurs in your mind. Don't hold on to things that do you wrong or that are problems in your business. Let them go and move on. And just knowing that you're going to have trouble, you're going to have problems in the future, and things aren't going to go as you had planned. Well, that's pretty self-explanatory. What others think doesn't matter. Fear of man has always been a thing with me. Like, I don't really want to. I want everybody to be happy with me, and getting over that is a really big step in moving forward, yourself forward. Because anybody's going to take advantage of you if you'll give it to them. They'll say, "Hey, I'll have two people working for me now instead of just me. You know, two people living my life. He's doing my bidding, and so am I." So, don't worry about what others think. If they give you a bad review or whatever it is that you're applying, however you apply this. Yeah, well, I can get really philosophical. I tell this to my kids all the time. When you don't want to keep going. It's kind of weird wording, but it works for them. When you just don't want to keep going, you keep on going. Because I've done this for 11 years, and I've wanted to quit, 11 times. No, that's only once a year. It's plenty more than that. But as soon as I stop and think, I just want to give up, and I look back at what I've done, and I see all my work, my years of work, my portfolio, I've climbed up this mountain, and I'm suddenly higher than I was before. If I quit and start another mountain, well, I'm 10 feet off the ground, 20 feet off. You're starting over fresh. It doesn't work. You just keep moving in your industry, unless it's a dead industry, you know, or unless you're changing careers entirely. But stick with what really gets you fired up, and don't quit it. Keep going, because you'll really appreciate it later. I appreciate the guys who have done it for 20, 30 years, because I look at them and think, that's what I want to be, you know. But in order to do that, you got to do it for 20 or 30 years. So, my last one is, you have one life, so go big. I've had a few family members die recently that were way too young to die. And it's really probably brought me to this philosophical place that I'm at now. It's just told me that you have basically every day is a gift, and you have to treat it like that. Take it and run with it as to the hilt, as far as you can go, and don't ever take one for granted, because you only get one shot. You know, every day basically. I've started collecting experiences. Like, just I'll say yes to everything. If there's something that comes my way, sure, you know. I just tried out for theater. I just thought I'd try it, you know, and I actually started doing it. I was like, okay, why not? You know, let's do this thing, things that are over my head. But it's helped me in every way to see, to capture possibilities that come in and potential businesses, potential money makers, and think, hey, let's take on something I haven't done before. So, well, I kind of sped through my presentation. I've got, that's kind of brings us back to Binuptu and Kilmail, where I am now. those things are pretty much the big hitters that I've applied to for my current businesses. So I guess we'll do question and answer.
Okay. We'll open up the floor to question and answer.
So whether it's in consulting or with your own ideas, could you talk for a minute about how you narrow down from, you know, many good ideas to one great idea that you want to pursue yourself as an entrepreneur?
Yeah. If you have more than one skill, it's easy to think you want to do everything. You know, if you have two or three that you really want to do. I love music, and I actually was in a band for a while, and I wanted to do that. And then I love art and design, and I have quite a few things that I really want to do. Art, painting, you know. And basically, as in my teen years, I really went full force in all those things and just started learning music. I started doing everything I could when I was living under my parents' roof for free. And when I got into the professional realm, I narrowed it down to what I could see myself doing long term. And what would really keep me interested. Programming was not it. I knew that from my 11-year-old saga. I knew that I wanted to do something creative. And so I narrowed it down by figuring out what I could do, I could see myself doing for years, you know, and continuing to grow. And also seeing where that niche, where that little slot would, if it would expand or if it was going to close in, you know. Flash was a really good one for me because I saw that this is the future of the web. You know, they're going to use this for a lot of purposes in the future. And if it's not Flash, it'll be something else that's just like it. Motion is just really interactive. So I thought, I'm going to go there because I can apply my stuff to it. And it was really hard for me to actually give up doing other things and actually hiring somebody to do something that I could do. You know, that's a really difficult thing for a self-employed person to do. Say, I could do that. I could do it better than him, but I'll pay him $50 an hour to do it because, you know, whatever. but that's a choice you have to make finally when you decide, I'm going to run full force at this and be the best in that field as I can. That answer your question? Kind of?
You meant kind of the ideas themselves, not so much what you wanted to do, but what ideas you wanted to work on or what features you wanted to implement.
Oh, like for Beneptu or for like just business in general?
Just in general, like you brainstorm several good ideas, how you...
Oh, okay. Well, we have done that several times. Had a few sessions where we brought several ideas. Okay, let's start a site like this because most of it comes down to the revenue model. Like, okay, that's not going to make money, or that's advertising. That's harder to make money at than selling a subscription or selling a product, you know. And then once we narrowed down the revenue model, how it's going to come in. Then we find out where the audience is, how big of an audience it is, and how much we can do ourselves marketing wise. Bootstrapping, I love it. You know, with Beneptu, we had seed money at the beginning. We went for a second round of funding, but we never got it because we threw money at it, and the return was the same as when we didn't throw money at it. So we gave up on. We're going to keep bootstrapping it then, and we don't have any money invested in it now. And it's still growing. So those kinds of things factor in a lot. Like, what can we do and what will die if we step away from it? And what will keep growing if we step away from it, you know? So a lot of factors go into it. Those are the biggies that I won't go after advertising based web, you know, web businesses. They're just really difficult. Unless you can really find, because it's changing so fast, the advertising space. They're doing learning, advertising, all these different ways that people are aggregating your information, and then like they dish out the perfect thing to you, but it costs, and it's all black magic and smoke, you know. And until that gets settled, I'm staying away from advertising. I'm doing more product-based and subscription-based, you know. So hope that answered the question somewhat.
Okay. Where do you see the future of web design going, like Web 2.0, Web 3.0? Is it going to be designing inside social networks for applications? Like, is it going to be Flash, taking Flash to a new realm? I'm curious, you've had so much time so close to it. What's your vision?
Yeah. Well, when I started, there was no social and there was no Flash. So I do think that those are the obvious giants in the world, you know. Web apps, it's getting so, you can, so much that you can almost create your own web. You know, you get on there and say, okay, I want a little bit of Twitter, I want a little bit of this, I'm going to mash it all up into this other, whatever the new site is, you know, and it's going to be all these feeds that you want to get, and it's just going to be very, very personal to you. You know, at Flash, you're able to, I mean, things are pretty much integratable within each other. You can drag and drop, and I remember when that concept was brand new, it was several years ago, sites were, you know, drag and drop this here, and you can have this feed and this here. It was like make your own web, but it wasn't catching on like it is now. I see the future of the web and design. I think there's several parts to it, because one is for information, you're going to have these aggregators. For design, which primarily my stuff will be for marketing purposes, companies that want to advertise to you, you know. I think advertising is going to be a lot more integrated into these web, you know, atmospheres. And that's where my stuff, marketing stuff, will come in. So there'll still be a need for that. There'll be aggregators, and then the as Flash just gets more and more integrated and easier to integrate, I think we'll just see a lot more real interaction, you know, video and really highly interactive web, almost Second Life-ish, you know. That's what I think.
As far as Been Up To Me goes, what are your like future goals and expectations for the website?
Well, we don't have any more investment to go into it. So we're not working as we were full time in it for a good year, and that's pretty much where we built all the features for it. The future of it is unclear. You know, it really depends on if somebody else wants to buy it. Hopefully we'll buy it, we'll sell it. If not, then we'll just keep it growing, and pretty soon it'll be a big name, and then we'll sell it, you know. So the end goal is sell it and make a bunch of money, kind of an investment thing, but not a whole lot of adding to it. Although, I mean, we already work with like Twitter and Facebook and all these other applications to integrate. So that was one big thing we learned with Been Up To, is we started out closed walled. Okay, everybody get on our site and ditch MySpace, and who needs them, you know. Didn't work very well. So we started getting integrated into other people's, where they already were, their sites, Facebook and MySpace and whatever, Bebo. So so we kind of laid out the future stuff with those things, and we're not going to do a whole lot of more adding to it unless something comes along with investment that doesn't want equity, which is not likely.
When you were talking about the Been Up To website, yeah. You said before that you weren't really into advertising on sites to make money. How did you propose that to the investors with the website, like how to invest money into it if there wasn't really going to be like an advertising revenue gain from it?
On Been Up To?
Yes.
Well, we do have advertising on Been Up To.
Okay.
It is an advertise. That's partly why I don't want to do advertising-based anymore. We have pretty good traffic, good enough, I thought, yeah, it sustains itself. It pays its own bills. It doesn't pay us, you know. And I realized that's a really tough market to get in because everybody's competing for your time. You know, everybody wants you on their website. And it's your eyes that they're paying for on their advertising banners and really your click. And, well, that's a whole other advertising. There's so many different ways you can advertise and get that stuff. But when we proposed it to the investors, they actually, it was only one. It was Seed Money, and he's a partner now. And he had already had a successful exit from a company where that was advertising driven. And no, you know what? Yeah, it was partly advertising, partly subscription driven. And so he knew the potential of it. And so it didn't take a whole lot of convincing for him. But really just, it's kind of like, it happened so that when we started Been Up To going, really ramping up, the economy started going down. And advertising just like, instead of getting, you know, dollar CPMs or, you know, 50 cent, it was like 15 cent, you know, I was like, well, I can't do anything with that, you know. And that was only for clicks, you know, not even for, well, no, CPM is just every thousand or whatever. But so, yeah, we didn't have to sell it to them. But in the future, I would have to sell a much more solid revenue model, you know, subscription based. I honestly think subscription is the way it's going. People aren't going to keep building tools and giving away for free because you can't go down to a pizza place and get free pizza. You have to pay for it, you know. So pretty soon people are going to realize you can't just build excellent tools and give them away for free and expect other revenue to come in. It doesn't work that way. It has for a while, but we're seeing what happens. Everybody's, you know, trying to get the investment dollars and trying to prove that they'll make revenue, and just there's just nothing out there. There's a lot free on the web right now. I think it's going to be subscription-based, and I think it's going to be either subscription or purchase from companies. You know, they'll be feeding money in to get these people on their site. So more direct, not even advertising, but, you know, user acquisition or whatever it is, you know. So, yeah.
Ian, you have a real combination of creative and business. For the young entrepreneurs in the room, over the 11 years, what would be a core lesson in balancing those things off? Because the artist and creative in you must be pulled in different directions when projects come forward. What is your litmus test now to go or no go on a project?
As a creative, same.
Yeah,
like,
as a creative who still has to pay the rent.
Oh right, well that is a hard one. You ask my wife; she's had to put up with me for 11 years. 11 years, yeah. Anyways, I guess you'll see this now on the video. Anyways, that's been a really hard one, because I have an artist temperament, and so I get real. That's why my whole roller coaster thing, it really affected me. That was a biggie for me. The litmus test for accepting things, well, now that I have kids and I'm still providing for my family, it really takes a lot to get an idea past me. You know, you have to really have a solid, if somebody's presenting it to me, it has to be okay, this person knows what they're doing, and they have a solid revenue model, and it's something that we can all achieve here. If I see black holes, okay, we got this far, and then we don't know what happens when that, you know, if we somehow make money, or this will happen, somebody will do that, and then I just call it quits on that one. You know, I say, okay, as soon as you have that part covered, come back to me. You know, on my own ideas, it's just if I can do it all myself or get one other partner, and I know that there's a market for it, if I can have all the pieces basically covered, and I know I can see it from beginning to end, then it looks good, then I'll approach it. I'll go after that one, you know. So that's a good question.
Ian Kilpatrick, thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.